From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. About 10 states have so-called red flag laws. The details vary, but in general, they allow law enforcement, and in some states, family or household members, to petition a court to remove guns from someone believed to be potentially dangerous. In New England, Connecticut has had a red flag law in the books the longest, since the massacre at Newtown Elementary School. Then recently, Vermont passed a package of gun restrictions that includes a red flag provision. Also, Massachusetts has been discussing a red flag bill, and Rhode Island's governor has done so by executive order. But in most states, including New Hampshire, there are many questions raised about this approach, including who gets to decide if someone's dangerous and how do they make that decision. Today in The Exchange, it's a review of red flag laws, and let's hear from you. Our number is 1-800-892-6477. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. Respond on Facebook or Twitter at NHPR Exchange. Again, the number 1-800-892-6477. We have two guests for the hour. Bob Clegg is here, president of ProGun NH and a former Republican state senator. And Bob Clegg, good to see you. Welcome back.
Oh, thank you very much for having me.
Also with us, Robin Skudlarik. She's an activist for the New Hampshire chapter of Moms Demand Action for Gun Sense in America, a part of Every Town for Gun Safety. And Robin, welcome back to you, too. Thanks for your time.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
Well, Robin, how effective a tool do you think red flag laws are, especially in preventing mass murder, but also suicide?
I think it's common sense that all states should have red flag laws. You know, again, we have a big suicide problem across the country, but certainly in New Hampshire. And mass shooters, I think it's like 43% of the time they have displayed warning signals or warning signs that they were going to be harmful to themselves or to others. And so this gives family members an opportunity to that know their family's best to be able to go before a court and petition to have their guns taken away so they're not harmful to themselves or to others.
How do you feel, Robin, when people say, well, it wouldn't have prevented this mass shooting or that mass shooting?
Well, that would go back to why do we have laws in the first place? I mean, all people are going to speed, but we still have speeding laws. We have to enact legislation. So when we do have, again, it's going to cut down on the number of crimes, again, and laws. And then once somebody commits them, like we do have two mass shooters that are in custody, we can then prosecute them. We pass laws. Yes, will they be broken? For sure. But we have to, it doesn't stop us from passing laws.
What do you think, Bob Clegg? How do you feel about red flag laws and this sort of movement among the states to adopt them?
Well, I think it's a bad reaction to a bad situation. The ability for people to be abused under that kind of a law is out there. In fact, in the state of New Hampshire, we already have people who do that. We have people who claim guardianship. In fact, I know of a case that's going on now. They claim guardianship by saying the person is abusive and a threat to themselves. They take their weapons away. And the next thing we know, they're beating the person, forcing them to sign checks. And in this one case, this elderly person ended up was forced to sign paperwork giving their entire estate.
So you're talking about the guardianship of an older person. I remember we did a whole program on that. I'm talking about it.
They used the same premise that you would have in the red flag. They went to court and said this person's a danger to themselves. That person had nobody to defend them. So I think that it's ripe for abuse. And there's a difference between a speeding law and taking away somebody's constitutional rights. It shouldn't be done that quickly, that the way it's written. Now, I'm looking at Delmar Burge had put in a piece this year. He gave it to all of us to go through, and we've been talking with him. You just can't decide to let somebody say that person's crazy. And, you know, there are pieces in here where it says that if somebody makes a threat, how many mothers and fathers have said, when my kid gets home, I'm going to kill him? Under the red flag law, that would instantly allow somebody to go to court and say they don't deserve to have any weapons.
You don't think the process is a little more extensive than that? I mean, there's a court, there's a judge, and presumably the judge would know that that's an idle, frustrated rant of a parent.
The way the law reads, it doesn't matter whether it's an idle threat. If it could have been carried out, it's under the red flags in most states that they would be able to lose their things. So you would have to be careful picking your words on anything.
In states that have these laws, I want to ask both of you about this. Supporters, Republicans and Democrats, call these the middle ground. For example, the Republican AG of Indiana, a conservative state, said Indiana's red flag law is a common sense measure that in no way inhibits the Second Amendment rights of law-abiding citizens. And Bob, other Republicans in other states with these laws have also felt like they're the reasonable middle ground. I just wonder how you feel about that.
Well, you know, we just had Marcy's law in the state of New Hampshire. There was a reasonable middle ground, too, on victims' rights that passed all of these Republican states. And the fact of the matter is that it gave the victims nothing. It gave the politicians all kinds of accolades for saying, oh, look what we're doing, when they absolutely were doing nothing. The biggest problem with Marcy's law, if you looked, was that it gave constitutional immunity for any government agent or any police officer who violated your right. That would be okay. But yet the whole premise of the bill was, look at what we're doing for you. So when politicians tell me they're doing the right thing, and I'm not so sure they are. And I think when we look at taking away people's constitutional rights, we need to have something a lot more strict than what I see out there. And just because somebody says you said something doesn't mean you did. And the idea that you're guilty and you have to prove your innocence is not the way this country was founded.
We'll definitely dig into some of the concerns that you have around people abusing these laws. But Robin, what about that middle ground? Is that what these represent to you?
I would say yes.
Between two diametrically opposed sides.
I would say that all of the red flag laws that are being passed now have bipartisan support, as well as support from opposing sides, from, say, you know, Bob's side of it and my side of it being gun violence prevention. You know, gun violence in America is a public health crisis right now. You know, I am coming from a personal place of it, of you know, trying to keep my kids safe. In 2018, there were 28 school shootings at elementary and secondary schools, resulting in 40 deaths and 66 injuries. You know, I listened to Bob talk about worrying about taking away people's constitutional rights. We're also concerned about our kids' rights to survive, life, liberty, the pursuit of happiness. And from what I've understood about all of these red flag laws, there is a process. It's not just, oh, my kid might commit suicide, or you have to have some proof before you go before a judge, and all parties have to go before the judge. And again, this gives family members, it's about empowering family members who know their loved ones best, right? I mean, to identify someone who is in a crisis, about to kill themselves or hurt someone else before a court. And before that, you don't have that. I had a family member who we knew was suicidal, who we were worried he had a gun, didn't have health insurance. This was maybe 10, 12 years ago, and did shoot himself in the head, survived somehow.
Wow.
Which is not usually 9 out of 10 if you use a gun, you die. So yeah, this to me is very personal. And if we had red flag laws in place, we could have taken the gun away.
Well, I want to bring this down to the level of the New Hampshire legislature, because as I said at the beginning, a couple states in New England already have these laws or are looking at them. With us now for a few minutes about what's been happening in the Granite State is NHPR's Lauren Chooljian. She covers gun policy and a bunch of other issues for us. She's our State of Democracy reporter. And Lauren, thank you for helping us out.
Thanks for having me.
So did this red flag approach come up at all in the New Hampshire legislature this year?
So sort of. Bob did mention that it was Representative Delmar Burridge who had brought it up. And back in March, there was this WMUR story that came out about a potential red flag bill, and that Jeb Bradley was on the story and Adam Sexton had asked him about it. And the majority leader said, yeah, we'd potentially call that for a vote this session. However, he may have got a little bit ahead of himself, as that didn't actually end up happening, in part, I think, because lawmakers had a lot to figure out by the end of the session, as you've talked a lot about on this program, including Medicaid expansion. But I also think, you know, the political will likely wasn't there in the Republican-led legislature, so it didn't come up. Now, Delmar Burge was the sponsor, and it wasn't introduced. It was a draft bill that Bob was talking about, and he passed that around all over town. I know he sent it to a lot of mom's safety groups as well, just like the one that we were talking about earlier. And also he sent it to police officers. He sent it to Democrats. He sent it to Republicans. And he worked on it with a retired clean police officer, John Stewart. And They, like I said, haven't officially introduced it, but I think they have plans to in September.
So they started to shop it around this year, Lauren, but then just too much other stuff got in the way. That's what it sounds
basically,
like.
Basically, and Representative Burge had asked, you know, he called it a rush order. He wanted there to be a special session about it, but obviously hasn't happened and is likely not to happen as well.
So, okay, so there was this conversation. It got pushed aside for the moment. Is that it? Do we hear more on this, or are we done with this?
It's not it yet. I mean, I know that there are a lot of meetings going on among Democrats about this and other types of gun control legislation that they'd like to bring up next session. So that's one thing. Like I mentioned, Representative Burge wants to introduce it later on. This is also a big talking point among Democrats at all levels of government in New Hampshire. Yesterday, Senator Maggie Hassan was in Hanover at the high school. She had been invited to speak there by some students who had organized a walkout after the Parkland shooting. And they wanted to know exactly what her policies were on gun control. She mentioned she wanted to eliminate what she calls restrictions on guns of war. She wanted to restrict guns of war. She wants to expand background checks. And she also brought up red flag laws. She believes that all states should have them. And here's a little bit of what she said.
We also want to make sure that any law that allows removal of firearms from somebody's home, that there's a judge involved and that there's a chance for somebody to challenge the action, right? We want to protect people's civil liberties and Second Amendment rights.
So you can hear she's kind of speaking to this argument that I know Bob mentioned earlier, and is something that's on a lot of people's minds who support the Second Amendment and who have guns at home and are passionate about, you know, having the right to have a firearm. That there is that balance that these laws have to walk where people would be able to have their guns later in life.
So how are Democrats going to thread the needle on this, Lauren, especially in a pro-gun state like New Hampshire?
Well, I think that's the balance that happens with any kind of gun legislation in this state. There are a lot of people who own guns, and there are a lot of people who are passionate about using guns for recreation. And so they're going to have to balance that. And I think it's also going to have we're going to have to see how the midterms go as well. How many, if any, of these districts get turned. You know, like I said, it is a Republican-led legislature, and it was Governor Sununu who signed the bill that allowed concealed carry without permits. So you kind of have a sense of where he stands. However, I will also add that the governor had brought together this task force about school and safety security. And one of the things that they were going to look at was this idea that would red flag laws be helpful? So that task force is supposed to give their recommendations to the governor in mid-June.
So that could also come up.
Yeah, so that could come up as well. And the idea there is that it would be an action plan, things that he could do now without the session, you know, happening, or things that they could push off till later to next session.
That's interesting. Okay, so Lauren, maybe we'll sit down with you once that Governor's
sure.
Commission on School Safety, that's what it's called, basically, mm-hmm. right, comes out. Thank you so much for helping us out.
Thanks for having me.
That's NHPR's Lauren Chulgin, our State of Democracy reporter. The number for you to join us here in The Exchange as we look at red flag laws, the conversation here in New Hampshire, but also what's happening around the country and here in New England. Join us 1-800-892-6477. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. Again, exchange@nhpr.org. You can respond on Facebook or Twitter. It's NHPR Exchange. Or again, give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. And Robin, you first. So your take on what happened here in New Hampshire and whether this ends the conversation in our state or not?
It's definitely not going to end this conversation. You know, lawmakers are coming together, bipartisan groups that are normally oppose each other are coming together because, again, this is something we can do to stop people from, again, going in that we can show are going to cause harm to others, that are going to cause harm to themselves. I mean, we do have a suicide epidemic going on in our country, but also in New Hampshire. And so I would have loved to have had that law in place to stop this family member from, again, showed many, many signs that something was going to happen, not to other people, but to themselves. So, again, this is not just a Democrat issue because, again, the three states that have been enacted laws, Vermont, Florida, and Maryland, have Republican governors. So we need to do this. The Florida, I think it's since May 19th, in Broward County alone, which is where the Parkland shooting occurred, they've had 19 orders sought.
So they're using this.
They're using it. It's already working. Yes.
Well, what do you think, Bob Clegg, on what happened here in New Hampshire? This conversation kind of came up, as we heard. This bill was shopped around pretty widely. And then in the end, people said, not right now.
Well, actually, a lot of people don't realize that we really did look at this because there's an elder abuse bill that was out there that actually had a red flag in it. And it had gone through the House without anybody even noticing it for some reason. And when it got to the Senate, all of a sudden people came out and said, you can't just take away the elders' firearms. And one of the biggest problems is a lot of the older people don't have the money to hire the best attorney. So you've got the attorney general's office, I'm assuming, is going to be the one that's going to be helping take away your weapons. And who do I hire if I don't have any money? So any red flag law is going to have to act almost the way we do indigent defense. You're going to have to allow them to have the best lawyers, whether it's Chuck Douglas or Evan Knappen. Somebody has to defend me, because if what's happening is my family wants to take what I have, I'm a collector. So some of my guns are actually, I've never fired, but they're worth a lot of money. They have a lot of history to them. So if somebody decides, hey, I can make $3,000, let's say that dad's crazy. What do you do? So there has to be something in here. And I'll tell you, Broward County, the problem with Broward County, if you look at it, is they allowed that to happen. They could have stopped that at any time, but instead, because they were getting cash money for making it sound like everybody was doing okay. So a lot of what we see happen, they could have stopped it, but they didn't.
When you say it, you mean Parkland?
I'm Parkland. The stuff that happens in Florida, it could have been stopped, but they ignored it. You don't go to somebody's house 39 times and tell me you don't have the ability to already go to court.
So you're saying we already have the ability to take guns away from someone who is dangerous like this
absolutely,
Parkland shooter?
Absolutely.
Under current law.
But it takes a lot to do it. You actually have to have proof. You can't just decide, my father's crazy, so take his guns. That's not how it starts. You have to actually have proof. And so far, the red flag laws are nothing more than stands for politicians to garner votes.
What do you think, Robin?
Not the way to work.
Well, Bob, you just got done saying that you people are going to be taking your guns away just simply by saying that my father's crazy and they want to make money off selling your guns. But again, it's a process where the person would get to go before the court and present to them, and they have to prove evidence. They can't just say, I think this is going to happen. You know, a lot of times these things are Facebook posts, on social media. They've written things down. They've displayed, maybe they've had the cops out to the house. And it is, to just say that the laws on the books are adequate, I would just totally disagree with you. What laws on the books are that you can do this in a hurry? Because a lot of times when somebody's going to do this, cause violence, especially to themselves, it's a rather quick decision a lot of times. And so I'm just wondering what laws on the books you think are adequate
for right now. Yeah, go ahead, Bob, and heading into a break, go ahead.
Real quickly, if you're talking about suicide, there are a number of people who attempt to commit suicide every single day, and it's called use of opioids and thinking that Narcan's going to save you. So if you really want to stop suicides, that's where you go. But as far as every red flag bill I have seen only requires somebody to make the accusation. Now, I'm guilty until proven innocent, and that's not how it works in the United States.
Well, after a short break, we will jump in with our listeners, and we'll go over to Vermont for a moment and find out about a red flag provision there. It's part of a broader package of gun laws in Vermont. Keep it right here. This is The Exchange on NHPR.
Spring is just about here, and Morning Edition is hitting the road. In our new weekly series, we're traveling across the Granite State to take you to new places and introduce you to new people.
Yeah, the moon looks very cinematic. What are we expecting to see tonight?
Now, people come here to see the alpacas.
Homebrewers starting out, how do you get from just whipping up batches in your basement to opening up your own tasting room?
Listen to Radio Field Trips, Morning Edition's new series about New Hampshire life and culture, Wednesday mornings from 5 to 9 on NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today, a review of red flag laws. Their goal is to get guns away from people who might be dangerous to themselves or others. But as we're hearing, there's lots of questions and concerns about how that's done and whether these laws are effective. Send your email to exchange@nhpr.org. Again, exchange@nhpr.org. Respond on Facebook or Twitter at NHPR Exchange or give us a call 1-800-892-6477. 1-800-892-NHPR. Here's an email that came in from Ken in Concord who says, politicians and media have focused on restricting gun access to people with mental illness. Most people with mental illness are not dangerous, Ken says. And there are many people without mental illness that are dangerous. Ken says red flag laws put the focus on where it needs to be, dangerousness. Red flag laws can also be very helpful in preventing suicide deaths. Ken, thank you for the email. And both of you, Robin, you first. So how do you determine, though, and I think this is what Bob Clegg keeps getting at, how do you determine dangerousness without stigmatizing people who have mental illness?
Well, I think that some of these people, these mass shooters that have, I don't know if you would qualify them as mentally ill. Again, mental illness doesn't necessarily equate with being dangerous to somebody or themselves. So again, it's not, you know, before you would have to prove, you maybe get somebody committed if you thought that they were going to harm themselves or somebody else. That process is extremely difficult to do. And then if you get somebody that's over 18, good luck with that. I mean, this is just something that can be put in place rather quickly. But again, the person still has an opportunity to go in there. I think looking at different laws, again, they vary from state to state. But whether or not the person can take it away temporarily for like 14 days or a month, can be up to a year, and then it has to be petitioned again. People have to go before the court, but they have to prove it. From everything that I've read about it and heard about it, is that you have to go in there and have some actual proof that these people are going to that are dangerous to themselves or to others. And again, why would we want anybody that is showing signs, right? They're literally in crisis. They're showing signs that they're going to be danger. Why wouldn't we want to take a dangerous weapon away from them?
So how do we show dangerousness then, as Ken puts it? So like comments on social media, things they say just out in the world, seeming unstable. How do we determine that?
I mean,
because it's kind of a judgment call in some instances.
Yeah, but again, it's allowing families. This is really what it's about. It's allowing, for the most part, families that have sort of been sitting, you know, their hands are tied. Yeah, you can call the police. You can. But again, there aren't laws to take their guns away from them. And so this is an opportunity for families for finally to be able to say, hey, you know, look, I've got all of this evidence. He's, you know, ranting and raving. He's threatened people, you know, and then go in front of a judge. The judge has to make the decision whether or not it goes into place. It's not like you go in there and petition and it just happens, from what I understand.
So, Bob, would you feel better about these laws? In some states, it's just law enforcement that can make that petition to the judge. It isn't family. Would that make you feel better, or do you just really feel worried about these no matter what?
I don't think so, because there was a case in the state of New Hampshire in the last 12 months where there was a man who was having an extramarital affair, and he was receiving psychiatric help at Riverbend, and his wife told him, if you go away this weekend with her, don't come back. You're done. We're done. And he went to see a psychiatrist, and the next thing she knows, she got a call, and he said, I need to talk to you. And when she went to the psychiatrist's office and he tried to diagnose her, I guess, he ended up committing her for what's supposed to be 3 days. So she got committed to the state hospital because she had a problem. She refused to participate because she knew what he had done. He had gotten her committed so he could have his three-day weekend with his girlfriend. And because she didn't, the 3 days doesn't include holidays or weekends. So she went in on a Friday night. Saturday, Sunday, and Monday doesn't count.
So she was involuntarily committed.
Involuntarily committed. She lost her guns because, again, he made the statement that, oh, and she has guns and she'll harm me. And so she ended up 7 days later, finally getting before a judge. And the psychiatrist said, well, she refuses to cooperate and answer our questions and allow us to diagnose her. So she got another 2 weeks. So it's already abused.
How do you address the frustration that Robin and her group feel that, you know, in some of these cases of mass shooters, there are signs that someone is dangerous and, you know, we feel helpless. And you read the coverage after something like Parkland and you go, oh, come on. You know, it was plain as the nose on your face that this person was going to hurt someone. So how do you address that, given the concerns you have about due process?
I do believe there's something we can do. When we had the two police officers in Manchester that got shot from the kid that everybody knew was
right.
a problem, and yet the gun line... the guy that was in charge of that just let it go for 13 days. So we have the provisions, but what we need to do now is say when you don't act as you're supposed to, you don't get a lateral position or a promotion, you actually get fired because two people got hurt. Luckily, they didn't get killed. So I think what we need to do is we need to have repercussions for those who are able to make those decisions now and who refuse to.
So people enforcing current laws.
Well, 39 visits to somebody's home for violence, and they don't think about going to court and saying, look, this guy has a problem, and we need to confiscate any weapons he has. That's absolutely ridiculous to say, oh, we need a red flag law for that. Really?
So we can do that now?
Yes, absolutely. You can take somebody who's a hazard or a danger to themselves before a court, or you can actually get them temporarily sent to the state hospital. It's not that hard. But what we don't want people doing is we don't want people using the mental health laws against people who may be having a temporary issue. It's like any other disease. And they'll be fine. We tried to fix the law that said that if you took somebody's guns away because they were committed, that they could get them back by going to the court and having it annulled. But there were groups out there that don't want that to happen.
Okay, lots more to dig into. But let's go to our listeners as well. The number here in the exchange, 1-800-892-6477. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. Again, exchange@nhpr.org. Ken, thank you for that email. And to our callers, Kelly from Hudson is on the line. Hi, Kelly. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi, thanks. My comment was for Bob. As a clinical health coach and the sister of someone who recently died from a drug overdose, I find his comment about suicides and opiate addiction really disheartening, a little infuriating, especially as someone who has multiple family members who have dealt with mental illness. The two, while both are behavioral and have mental health components, you know, saying that...
Kelly, we're losing you there. Oh, Kelly, I'm sorry. Sometimes that happens when people call from the road. Thank you for the call, Kelly, and I appreciate you jumping in, and I'm really sorry to hear about what happened to your loved one. Bob, she addressed it to you, just taking offense with the opioid comment, not really related to red flag laws.
And I'm sorry for her loss. I have people that have also died, but there are people who are committing suicide every day. They know the effect of the drugs. They know what's going to happen, and yet they don't seek the treatment. And when they do seek the treatment, the two I know that died and were very close to, they just kept going back because they didn't see any other... And I don't believe it's a mental illness. They just didn't see any reason to live anymore.
Well, and maybe Kelly would have tied that into our conversation about red flag laws if her line hadn't dropped out. So, Kelly, again, sorry for your loss and sorry about your call dropping out. Again, you can join us, 1-800-892-6477, or you can send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. Let's talk about Vermont and what happened there just recently. And as both of you, I'm sure, know, Vermont passed a package of gun laws with a red flag provision included. Helping us out with that right now is John Dillon. He's a reporter from Vermont Public Radio and the New England News Collaborative. And John Dillon, thank you for being with us. We really appreciate it.
You're very welcome.
So as I said, this came as part of a broader package of gun control measures. What did the red flag aspects of this bigger bill say, John?
Well, there are actually three bills, three separate pieces of legislation. Two, I guess you could categorize as red flag legislation. One in particular that's pretty close to what you're talking about would allow police to get a court order, well, actually a prosecutor, somebody in the state attorney's office or the attorney general's office to go to a court and say and convince the court they would have to meet the clear and convincing evidence test that a person is in imminent risk of harming themselves or others. With that court order, the authorities can then go and take a person's weapons for a period of up to 6 months. But there's a series of legal steps they have to go through to prove that, at least to the court. There have to be threats, there have to be acts of violence, there has to be some demonstrable aspect of behavior that justifies taking a person's weapon. The other piece of legislation that was related that the governor signed was having to do with domestic violence, and that allows police, when they go respond to a domestic violence scene, and if they see a weapon in plain sight, to take that weapon without a court order. The person can then petition to get it back, but the argument there was, and the legislature really, really believed it because both of these bills were supported overwhelmingly, was that domestic violence cases, it's in that window of an incident and an arrest or even, you know, right around then where the greatest threat exists. So if you can take the weapon away at that point, it would be of the most benefit. So those were the two having to do with red flag. And the other bill that the governor signed, part of the package, was extremely controversial, and we can talk about that. But these two were not.
Yeah, so talk a little bit more about that, because you did report, John, that the governor faced a lot of pushback for signing, you know, this broader package of gun legislation.
Yeah.
But the red flag provisions themselves, and that's what we're talking about, didn't get that much pushback in Vermont?
Not at all. I mean, they
not at all.
Overwhelmingly by the legislature. In fact, during the debate on other gun legislation, lawmakers on both sides pointed to these red flag provisions as something that they could get behind and were non-controversial. The controversial ones, and the governor signed three, one in April, the controversial one set a magazine ban, a high-capacity magazine ban. It raised the legal age to buy a weapon to 21 in Vermont, and it instituted universal background checks. And the sort of the background on all of this, all three pieces, was right after Parkland, a day after Parkland, we had an incident where a young man, 18-year-old, was arrested for threatening to shoot up his high school. And he had written very graphically in his journal about his plans, sort of very methodical plans. He emulated Dylan Klebold, the shooter in Colorado and Columbine. He even used that name. So the governor, who was strongly anti-gun control, pivoted quite dramatically and supported these bills. So when he signed them, the people who very much support Second Amendment rights appeared in force and yelled and screamed and said traitor and really called them all kinds of things I can't say on the radio.
But in terms of the red flag piece, John, that was not controversial.
They were not protesting the red flag piece. They were, you know, basically said we can live with this. But they really objected to the magazine ban and the universal background checks. They just said, you know, that's a burden that's not going to be enforceable.
In terms of the red flag piece, John, what happens next? Like, for example, do local police need more resources to carry this out? Are attorneys gearing up for having to, you know, contest these gun takeaways? Or what's next with this? This part of
it? Well, it's already been used once in the case of this young man who was arrested, and then the case actually went up to the Supreme Court. The high court overturned his being held without bail. So then immediately he was the subject of this imminent risk or imminent harm protection order, and he was ordered not to have or obtain firearms. As for police gearing up, I imagine they will need training. But as I said, it's the prosecutors, the state's attorney's office, and the attorney general who actually do the legal briefing on it. I don't think there is much contesting the case with the young man who was ordered not to possess weapons. So there hasn't been really legal testing of the red flag provisions yet in our court system.
Okay. John, anything else, again, in terms of this red flag provision or provisions that jumped out at you from doing the reporting?
Well, just the lack of debate over this aspect of the gun package. As I said, it was the other piece of it, in the magazine ban and the governor's switching on the background checks and other aspects. It was not the red flag things that were controversial. In fact, on the domestic violence bill that I mentioned, that bill was attempted last year, and they couldn't even get it on the House floor. This time around, this is the legislation having to do with seizing a weapon in plain sight in a domestic violence case. That just sailed through. So there was a completely different tone in our legislature. I guess that was the overwhelming thing that happened this year. There's a completely different tone and completely different momentum for gun legislation after Parkland and after the student here was arrested.
Okay. John, thank you very much for being with us. We really appreciate it.
You're welcome.
That's John Dillon, reporter for Vermont Public Radio and the New England News Collaborative. He covered the package of bills that the governor there recently signed around gun control. And Robin, did you want to jump in on his momentum comment?
Well, yes. I also just wanted to applaud them for what they've done in Vermont, our neighboring state that has a big gun culture the way New Hampshire does. But again, the domestic violence part, where 50 American women are shot and killed by current or former intimate partners in our country every single month. And in New Hampshire, 2 out of 5 women in New Hampshire have suffered from some form of intimate partner violence in their lifetime, exceeding the national rates for the prevalence of domestic violence. And we know the presence of a firearm in a domestic violence situation makes it 5 times more likely that the victim will be shot to death. And then half of all homicides in New Hampshire involve domestic violence, and nearly half of domestic violence homicides involved a firearm. So to see that they're able to take away a gun at the scene of an incident of domestic violence is a huge win.
What do New Hampshire laws say now, Bob Clegg, about the presence of firearms in a domestic violence situation? I thought that was a situation where you could already take the gun away.
Well, you really can't. I mean, if my wife punches me in the nose and I do the right thing and I call the police and he sees that my gun is on the counter, why should he take my gun? I haven't done anything. So that's kind of ridiculous.
You haven't done anything, but
right.
She has.
Right. So, but if they see a gun, they're going to take it. It doesn't matter who the perpetrator of the violence was, and that doesn't make any sense at all. Right now, if you're charged with domestic violence, you can get a temporary order, which you lose your right to possess. But after that, they actually have to convict you before you can take it, which is why we tell people, including women, don't plead out to a misdemeanor on domestic violence if you didn't do anything.
Go ahead. Real quick, Robin.
Well, I was just going to say, again, Bob was saying women are the issue. Men, as far as I know, are not victims for the most part of domestic violence abuse, so certainly not to these numbers. 50 American women every single month are being killed by their partners.
Well, maybe that's a whole nother show, but we can talk more about the presence of guns in homes where there is domestic violence, whether perpetrated by men or women, and we'll keep taking your calls. Join us, 1-800-892-6477. We'll be right back. This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Tomorrow on our show, a new book on White Mountains, Search and Rescue. That's tomorrow on The Exchange. This hour, we're looking at red flag laws and whether they achieve their goal of removing guns from people who might be dangerous to themselves or others. There are lots of questions about these, as we're hearing. And let's hear from you. Send email to exchange@nhpr.org, exchange@nhpr.org. You can respond on Facebook or Twitter. It's NHPR Exchange. or give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. Bob Clegg is here, president of ProGun NH, a former Republican state senator, along with Robin Skudlarik. She's an activist for the New Hampshire chapter of Moms Demand Action for Gun Sense in America. And both of you, let's go right back to our listeners. And Wayne is calling from Durham. Hi, Wayne. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Good morning, Laura. As a state representative, I was the sponsor of several bills around gun safety, none of which made it, except for the one that did keep a ban on guns at UNH, the only gun-safe area in the state. I would point out that up until 2 years ago, we had, in effect, a red flag law when police chiefs could screen people seeking permits for concealed weapons. My police chief tells me he rarely denied, but because he knew the community, he said, you should see the people I did deny. And even that was taken away so that now we are completely vulnerable as a state under the current statutes. Now, we have a group of Democrats actually working to find a way to have common ground with the Republicans on something that would work. And this one sounded promising until I heard the discussion. Thank you for listening.
So you're a state rep, Wayne, and you were behind some of these red flag laws. So I want to ask you, how do you feel about some of the concerns that Bob Clegg has raised that, you know, this could be abused by someone who just wants to take grandma's guns away?
Yeah. I heard those over and over again, including when the leader of when I sponsored legislation to allow school boards to prohibit guns in their buildings, which I thought was reasonable. The leader of I think one of the gun rights groups came and testified in the New Hampshire legislature with a gun strapped to his hip, contrary to law in the Capitol. It was such an obvious act of defiance. I think we'll never find away if that's the attitude. And I, by the way, I was the one sitting six seats away when the state rep dropped her pistol on the floor.
So, okay, but that aside, how can you address the concern that is often raised about these laws, not just here by Bob Clegg, but in other states, that someone could say, you know, look, you're making me mad, and by the way, I have more status in society than you, so I'm going to go to a court and take these guns away. Can you address that specifically?
I share that concern. I do. And I, when I sponsored the mandatory arrest bill for violators of restraining order, which Governor Gregg signed into law in 1989, I think it was in fact so that at least people who, when police walk into a situation, they not only have to arrest the person violating the restraining order, but they would give up their weapons as well. It's a pretty good prima facie evidence that if someone is assaulting their partner and they have a weapon, it's a good idea to take the weapon away.
All right. But well, Wayne, thank you. Yeah.
But until we can get them to the table to work this out, how do we get anything done in New Hampshire?
Okay, so let's talk about that with our guests. So how do we work this out? I mean, you're both sitting here at my table, and I appreciate that. But Bob, you first. Robin, I hear from you, too. How do we work this out?
Wayne is right. The person that stood up was the president of New Hampshire Firearms Coalition, and he is not a pro-gun person. He is actually an anti-gun person who does everything he can to incite hatred. He wore that gun knowing full well that he is not allowed in the chambers to wear that gun. He did it on purpose. Now, this is the same guy who threatened to harm my children because I brought up the fact that they are using their money illegally. They're not reporting it. They're taking donations. And I will also tell you that Moms Demand should actually like Alan Rice because he went to the Chiefs Association and tried to actually stop concealed carry permit. So what he does is he incites people to hate people who have guns. And he's a Massachusetts police officer. So if you look at it, he's sworn an oath to uphold the Massachusetts police laws, Massachusetts gun laws, and he really likes it. So how do we get together on something?
Yeah, how
it's
do we
simple.
Come to the table like
we
Wayne says?
We ignore
Thank
guys
you,
like New Hampshire Firearms Coalition because they're not on my side, and they make her side look bad. And we sit down and we talk. How do we make the person that we know is going to be a problem, like that kid that bought a gun that never should have, how do we fix that? We can sit and we can actually come up with the right ways to do it.
So what is the right way to do it? Robin, what do you think?
Well, I would start with universal background checks, which, I mean, New Hampshire legislatures have been gutting our laws in New Hampshire. I mean, permitless carry is an just an enormously bad idea. Again, that law was in place for 100 years. You know, if police had been out to a house numerous times and they wanted to carry a concealed weapon, they had to go before their, you know, local police chiefs and have them decide. And they might say, hey, you know what? We've been out to that house a number of times. Probably not a good idea for this guy to be carrying a concealed weapon. But again, a 100-year law that seemed to be working fine, we had to the New Hampshire legislature decided to just gut when Sununu came in.
So let's talk about that real quick. Is that a good start, Bob?
Well, real quick, there were a lot of chiefs that were abusing their power. And if you spoke against them at a town meeting and didn't want to give them that new cruiser or something else, you suddenly weren't suitable anymore. In fact, one lady had had her permit for 15 years and suddenly she wasn't suitable. A mother that had never done anything. She doesn't even have speeding tickets.
So if a court were involved, like red flag laws, would a judge be able to sort of see through that sort of personal vindictiveness there?
Well, that's what was happening. But what people were doing is spending $5,000 to go to the superior court by the time they were done to have their right where the judge said, there's no reason for you to have done that. And there was no repercussions for the chiefs who were doing that. So what happened was they'd look and go, oops, it cost them nothing, but it cost people $5,000. Not everybody has $5,000 to go to court to secure their rights.
Well, here's a Facebook comment that came in from Andy Shigori, who's been active in police chiefs associations and so forth. He says, there is no current law that allows taking a person's guns. Suicide laws allow taking the person into custody, not seize firearms. When they get out, they have them back. The Parkland situation could happen here, Chief Shigori says. He says only the long and difficult process to get guardianship and the consequences of that could allow someone to control another's life, including guns. Not very easily done. Robin, do you want to jump in on that first? Chief Shigori saying it's not easy to do this right now.
To take guns from people?
Yes.
Yeah, it's not, especially in our state. I mean, I think Bob would agree. I mean, we have extremely lax gun laws in place now. And again, speaking about going back to, you know, what do we do if we know that somebody's dangerous, right? Before, and we don't have any red flags laws. You try to get a mental health commitment. But what if they don't? What if they don't show signs for that? For example, before killing six people in California, a shooter displayed numerous red flag laws, including homicidal and suicidal threats. His parents alerted law enforcement, but he didn't meet that criteria that I just mentioned for mental health commitment. As a result, he was able to keep his guns and use them in a killing spree weeks later. California then passed its red flag law in 2014. So, again, this is we're talking about people in a crisis situation who are going to be harmful to other people. I mean, I'm not sure what Bob thinks that we should do or that somebody that is displaying those warning signs. Do you think that they should have access to a gun?
Yeah. So that's Wayne's point about, you know, coming to the table. And I think everybody agrees we don't want someone who has homicidal intent to have access to weaponry. The problem is, Bob, I'm guessing you would say, how do you determine intent?
Well,
determines intent?
It's not so much intent. And Chief Shigori is a nice guy, and we talk a lot and we get along. But I'm sorry if doing his job is difficult. But the whole purpose of a constitution is to make sure that somebody can't take your rights easily. So there are ways to go after people's guns. You go before the courts. You seek an injunction, or you seek the ability to go in and take somebody's firearms away from them based on what they're doing. But it's a judge. You have to prove your case. So I'm not guilty and have to prove my own innocence. You have to prove I'm guilty. And that's hard.
The hard thing is, too, that often these people haven't done anything. But then it's too late, and 15 people are dead on the floor.
But if you notice that they always pick places that are gun-free zones, when was the last time somebody tried to do a mass shooting in an area that wasn't a gun-free zone?
Robin, do you want to jump in?
I'm sorry. A gun-free zone? I mean, I don't know that they list churches and outdoor arenas as gun-free zones, you
yes.
know, for concerts. They do.
Yes.
So there's a sign on our church saying no guns? I don't think so.
I guess your point, Robin, is that these mass shootings take place in all sorts of situations, not just schools. So.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you know, they get back to the idea of let's put more doors on schools. You know, we're going to make our schools like prisons, and that's all well and good. But then you send your kid to a movie theater and or to a concert or to church. And they're getting gunned down. I mean, you know, it can take months, as far as I understand it, to do anything in the court system. So red flag laws are in place to do something quickly. And again, quickly could be really fast. We might need to see somebody. We could say this person seems like they're going to commit a dangerous act tomorrow, and we can't wait for the court system laws in place.
Does New Hampshire have the court system? If we were to pass a red flag law, do we even have the court capacity to do those quick evaluations or judgments? Because, you know, New Hampshire courts, as you know, both of you know, Bobby first, are pretty overwhelmed.
They already have the ability. If you have a problem, there's already the ability. I don't know how many times you've been in court, but in Superior Court, it's not unusual for the judge to call a recess because he has to deal with an emergency situation.
I see.
So we already have the ability. It's already being done. But as Chief Shigori said, it's not easy. He's right, because you actually have to prove something.
And you're saying it shouldn't be easy.
And I just want to point out that, yes, churches typically make it known and concerts make it known that there are no firearms. So I want somebody to show me the place where there was massacre where everybody had a gun or was allowed to have a gun. There aren't any.
Go ahead, Robin. And I think we're getting a little off the topic of red flag laws, but go ahead.
There were people that had guns in Las Vegas at that concert.
No, there weren't. That was a gun-free zone.
There were people that had guns.
Mm-hmm. Well, if they... I feel like, again,
Bob keeps going back to proving guilty or innocent. What does it have to be guilty or innocent if somebody's in a crisis or, you know, they're out of their mind with rage or anger and they're going to go ahead and harm somebody? It's not a matter of being guilty or innocent. At that point, we just need to stop violence that we can see is about to happen. I mean, this is what parents do all the time. And we have to have the ability to go in and do it. In case of my family member, I wasn't able to go in and do anything. It wasn't my child. I didn't have a right. They were over 18. There was nothing. I couldn't even get them into nobody would even listen because there was no health insurance involved. And we continually gut health insurance in this country. So it's a lot of things that we need to have these red flag laws, and they are bipartisan. They're happening all over. I mean, I don't love to ever talk about people from the NRA, but in March, NRA activist Chris Cox, who is executive director of an Institute for Legislative Action, said that he called for that we need to stop dangerous people before they act. So Congress should provide funding for states to adopt risk protective orders.
Risk protective orders is another word for red flag laws.
Extreme risk protective orders. Yes.
So a couple emails have come in, and here's Brad, who says, "I think some sort of red flag law is a good idea. What I have not heard, though," Brad says, "is the idea that a person of concern be removed from the situation for an extensive psych evaluation. If the person proves dangerous or unbalanced, appropriate measures can be taken. If the person proves mentally balanced and harmless, the accuser should be investigated for criminal slander. If someone's rights are to be infringed, let's err in a direction we'll get treatment for those that need it immediately while protecting the accused from false charges." That kind of raises the story that you told earlier, Bob, about the man who involuntarily committed his wife because he wanted to go on a 3-day fling.
Listen, if there was some kind of repercussion for people who make false accusations, I think that we take a step forward, because he's right. There needs to be something done to those who show something or show that they perhaps are going to do something that's dangerous to others.
Would that make you feel better about red flag laws
if there were protections for false accusations? I think we get closer. We definitely get closer.
Let's take another email. Thank you, Brad, for that one. Here's Sue on the Seacoast. "I am not convinced that the current legislature has a clear picture of what New Hampshire constituents want when it comes to gun legislation," Sue says. "I would love to see a simple, straightforward, statewide referendum asking clear questions like, should there be red flag laws? Should high-capacity weapons be banned? Should the age limit for owning guns be raised?" Sue says, "In light of so many shootings in the past couple years, I would imagine that a lot of people have a different opinion now than they did at the last election cycle." Sue, thank you. In terms of referendum, people often say New Hampshire doesn't need... we're not a referendum state. We have... we can raise constitutional questions, but we're not a referendum state like Maine, so we couldn't do that. But people often say, Bob, that we sort of have a referendum state because we turn over our legislature every 2 years. So I just wonder what you think about Sue's point that, you know, people's opinions are different now than they were in the last election cycle.
Our referendum doesn't require a petition. Our referendum is every time somebody speaks because they want to get elected, go and ask them the question. And I keep saying it over and over and over again. I said it about marijuana. Why aren't we asking our federal people what they're going to do? And we're coming up to an election now. There's a whole lot of people. There's 425 people that we're going to elect. Let's go out there and let's start talking to them and see what they're going to do.
What do you think about this political question that Sue asks, Robin?
Yeah, again,
you know, where are people going to go on this in the next election?
I mean, I'm pretty hopeful that that this next election will make a huge difference and that we will be able to start passing some of these laws. I mean, I would call for policies in New Hampshire, red flag laws, bump stop ban, background checks on all gun sales. I think, again, Vermont, who had pretty much around the same no laws that we have here in New Hampshire, has really done an amazing thing, in my opinion, in keeping people safe and still allowing people to own guns. I mean, it's the right's not absolute.
All right. We will wrap it up there for the moment, but I have the feeling we'll be back. I want to thank both of you very much for coming in. Bob, good to see you. Thanks
good
for your time.
You.
Bob Clegg, president of ProGun NH, a former Republican state senator. Robin, thank you also for your time. I appreciate
thank
it.
Thank you so much.
Robin Skudlarik, activist for the New Hampshire chapter of Moms Demand Gun Sense in America, a part of Every Town for Gun Safety. This is The Exchange on NHPR.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters. Hey, if you like what you heard, spread the word. Please give us a review on iTunes to help other listeners find us. And thanks.